Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sidorick. Here in Boston and in Massachusetts, it's pretty well documented that politically we lean to the left. Statewide, there are three times as many registered Democrats as there are Republicans. But does that mean we're politically intolerant of other viewpoints? According to a new study recently published in The Atlantic, Suffolk County may be the most politically intolerant county in the entire country. Data for the study was analyzed by PredictWise in an effort to determine whether some communities in America are demonstrably more or less politically forgiving than others. Amanda Ripley wrote about the findings for The Atlantic, and she joins us now. Hello, Amanda.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And listeners, we want to hear from you on this as well. How often do you find yourself in meaningful conversations with people from the other side of the aisle? Are you having a hard time dealing with people who disagree with you on issues like guns or immigration or climate change or President Trump? Do you buy the notion that Boston and Suffolk County are the most politically prejudiced in the country? And have political disagreements affected your relationships with family or friends? You can call us 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Amanda, Suffolk County, how did you guys determine that this is the most politically prejudiced place in the country?
Well, this all started because we wanted to do a story on political polarization, but we didn't want to just do another story lamenting how terrible it is. And we thought it might be interesting to see if we could find the outlier, find a place where people seem to be inexplicably still open-minded politically. And so we worked with PredictWise, and what they did was they started with a poll of 2,000 people across the country and asked them 14 questions about how they feel about the other side. So this is not about how you feel about the other side's policies or ideology, but, you know, do you think the term selfish is a good way to describe Democrats or Republicans? How would you feel if your child married someone who was a Democrat or a Republican? Those kinds of questions that help get at, imperfectly, but help get at how people feel about regular Americans who support a particular party. And then once we did that, we knew a huge amount about those 2,000 people. And what PredictWise does is some pretty complicated modeling to understand what makes these people similar and different from the other 300 million people in the country. And then doing that, we were able to see which demographic and geographic traits seem to correlate with political prejudice. And we found out, for example, that people who are white, people who are older, people who are educated, all these things seem to correlate with political intolerance in ways that were in some ways surprising, in other ways not. But maybe most interestingly to me is we saw that geographic political diversity in your neighborhood really matters. So people who have more political diversity in their neighborhood, which, for example, I do not because I live in Washington, D.C., which went 94% for Hillary Clinton, people who have more political diversity tend to be a little bit less likely to stereotype and demonize the other side.
So you yourself would admit, I think, that you guys, this is not perfect methodology. Basically, you're talking about 2,000 surveys and then assigning scores to more than 3,000 counties. Do you worry at all about kind of overgeneralizing, painting with a broad brush as you're putting this data out there?
Yeah, I mean, what we would like to do is survey 300 million Americans, which would be the right way to do that. And that would cost billions of dollars. So what was out there before was nothing. And so we took nothing. And we tried to drive the reporting based on some actual, you know, best guesses based on data. So instead of just parachuting into some town in Minnesota and saying, this place seems more politically open-minded and writing about, like, the guys at the diner, which is usually how these stories go, we decided to use the data to try to point me in the direction of a place that was unusual. And that's how I ended up focusing the story on a place in far upstate New York called Watertown, which we believe to be among the least politically prejudiced places in the United States. And then, you know, the question is to figure out, were we right? You know, to spend some time on the qualitative side of the equation and figure out, is our data actually pointing us in the right direction?
All right. Well, we are going to use that data right now to launch a conversation about this. So Amanda Ripley, contributing writer at The Atlantic and senior fellow at the Emerson Collective. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Joining us here in the studio is Massachusetts Republican activist and political writer Ed Lyons. Ed, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me back.
And also with us is Jordan Berg-Powers, executive director for Mass Alliance, a coalition that advocates for progressive policies. Jordan, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So let me start with just kind of a general reaction from both of you guys. Do you buy that Suffolk County is the most politically intolerant county in the country?
I would say it probably is, and it's something that we should be really proud of, just like we were about Nixon. I think that ultimately what we're saying is that we're intolerant of the idea that climate change isn't real, that black people's lives don't matter, and that immigrants should be in cages. And so the idea that we are intolerant of those things is something that I'm definitely proud of.
Ed, I'm going to guess you're going to push back on that.
No, I think I agree with Jordan on those particular issues. And actually, I lived in Boston for 20 years until very recently. I've been involved in politics inside Boston and around the state for a long time. I do think there is intolerance, but I'm uncomfortable saying it in the broad way. I don't really think it's about policy. I think it's more complicated than that. But, you know, I think, you know, we Republicans don't get to be the persecuted minority very much. So I've enjoyed this past week, everyone discussing our oppression. And I have all kinds of sob stories if you want to hear them, but I wouldn't recommend asking me.
All right. Well, listeners, don't forget you can jump in on this conversation as well. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. The elephant in the room here, I think, so to speak, is Governor Charlie Baker. He's a Republican. If Massachusetts is so liberal and politically intolerant, how have we had so many Republican governors over the years?
I think that's complicated, and I think our politics has changed over time, and our national politics have changed, and the amount of nationalization in our politics has changed. I do think that Governor Baker winning Suffolk County and almost winning Boston on his third try does say something about what the model does and does not tell us. I think he won on likability, on paying respect to, you know, as Jordan was saying, certain issues about civil rights. So I do think that he managed to sort of hack the system that Amanda and her peers described in the article. And I do think that it's a good way to talk about what the model does and doesn't say.
Yeah, I actually want to go back to something Ed said earlier about the idea that Republicans are oppressed, which I think is the heart, actually, of this article, and the real dangerousness of using prejudice and words like prejudice to talk about something like this. I mean, prejudice is something we shouldn't use lightly to talk about people who have frankly, wrong ideological viewpoints. Who view certain people as inhuman. I don't think we should think of that as the same as black and brown folks, Latinx folks, people like myself, who have systematic oppression and systematic prejudice in our faces on a daily basis. So I think that, you know, ultimately this article really reflects the media's desire to have a story about partisanship rather than some of the deep roots and the deeper things that are actually going on in America. And Charlie Baker really is just a signal to that. It's not just as simple as R versus D.
Well, if you really dig down there, I think it's one thing if you're talking about folks to either extreme, but if you're talking about a more moderate Republican, do you still feel that that's an acceptable, if you don't want to use prejudice, tolerance for different political views? How do you have conversations with people if you're not willing to listen to their point of view?
I think, again, that's actually a really good point, and I think that that's also what gets missed in this conversation. Ultimately, what needs to happen is a conversation, but it doesn't mean we have to be tolerant of those viewpoints. So I think what's important is that we should always listen. We should always come with care. We should always not be ashamed to be made fun of for coming with facts and figures and the things that the left is often demonized for, but rather that we should feel free to come with those things, but also with an intellectual curiosity as to how people got where they are. And frankly, Charlie Baker has done that with people on the left, and that's why he's been so successful, is being able to bridge those things.
All right, I want to bring some callers in here. Don't forget, you can join us 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Susan from West Roxbury, you're on the line. Welcome, Susan. What's on your mind?
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. What is on my mind is I've lived in Boston for about 30 years, but I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania, and it's really uncomfortable to go back there sometimes because, especially since the last election, even college-educated people who might be more prone to read widely and understand the statistics, many of them voted for Trump, and I have nothing to say when they come up with what is clearly homophobic, anti-Semitic, closed-minded, narrow, and prejudicial statements to support why they chose to vote that way. And it's really interesting because Erie's a bellwether. It hadn't voted Republican since, I don't know, before John Kennedy. So I have relatives in other parts of the country as well who voted red this time and aren't usually voting that way. So I find it hard to believe that Suffolk County is more prejudiced than many people who won't speak to me in Erie because I have an Elizabeth Warren sticker on my car when I go to visit.
Yeah, Susan, it's an interesting question. So I think kind of coming out of that, How big is the Trump factor here? Because that, for a lot of folks, as she mentioned, it's not necessarily tried and true Republicans. Some folks who either hadn't voted before or who were maybe independents voted for Donald Trump. And that has been a very divisive issue for our country. How much do you think that factors in?
I think it's big. I think that this study talks about like demographic and cultural markers. I don't think everybody is necessarily disagreeing on specific policies. I think they're saying, I have shortcuts in my mind. You're religious or not religious. You're ex-urban versus urban. You're black versus white. I think that we put people in these categories and that we react to them. So me being a moderate Republican who's very educated, who, you know, agrees with a lot of the civil rights consensus, people think, oh, well, I can talk to you, even though they won't like my opinions on government unions or what to do about the Boston public school system or about occupational licensing, or I could list a zillion differences, how to run the MBTA. But because I sort of have these demographic and cultural markers that they'll listen to me, where if I didn't have certain markers, they would not listen to me, even if I didn't have radically different views. So I do think that we have to be careful about why we're disagreeing. I don't really think it's about policy, even though we can cite dramatic policy differences that come to us from our television screens.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually the article itself talks about, from Lilia Mason, talks about the fact that Americans are really divided in terms of their identity. And so really Trump has just surfaced some of the white supremacy that's been hidden for years that the Republican Party has whistled at. He's been more open to talk about it. And so those things are surfacing in new and ways that are hard for people to sort of grapple with, talk about. Much to the caller, I'm actually from originally, my family in rural Pennsylvania. I go home to rural Pennsylvania myself, outside of Lehigh Valley. And I would just encourage, I actually went out and made sure to talk to all my family members who voted for Trump, because I really wanted to make sure that they understood that there was something really insidious at the heart of that vote.
How did those conversations go?
They were tough, but they knew that I came from them loving them, that I would love them from the beginning, I'd love them at the end. And ultimately, they might not, I don't think they're progressives. I don't think by any stretch they've come to some sort of enlightenment, but they see some of the troubling conversations and they'll bring those to light when we see them coming off. Like, oh, Jordan, I really didn't like that he said those things about those people or these people. So I do think that there are opportunities when you come at people and have conversations from love.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned having those conversations. Amanda Ripley, the writer for The Atlantic, I know, wrote about this idea that the more isolated you are, the less you talk to people with different views, the more likely you are to be intolerant of other views. Ed, as a Republican here in Massachusetts, have you found that folks are able to have honest intellectual conversations with you, or do you feel kind of dismissed out the gate?
Well, I really am a really weird Republican, so I don't think that I could talk about what everybody's experiencing.
Fair enough.
I do think they're Republicans.
I'm sure you have some friends who can speak to it.
Yeah, I do think the Republicans, what's interesting about this study was the Republicans in Boston were more reasonable than Republicans in other parts of the state. I thought that was really interesting. I think I know why. I think it's because a lot of Republicans in Boston buy into certain things. So Anthony Amore, a Republican, a friend of mine who ran for Secretary of State, because he worked at the Gardner Museum and because he like lives a life of the mind, that people sort of like put their guard down and say, oh, okay, you work at the Gardner Museum. Okay, well, you're not one of those people. And they would listen, even though he said, I want show ID to vote, which people here don't want. But what I meant is because he had these cultural markers that the conversation began, where if he was some guy with a pickup truck, they'd be like, well, I'm not talking to you. So I do think we have to be careful. And that can even happen inside the Democratic Party. I watched the fractured communities around the Boston 2024 Olympics. I do think there are all these factors involved that are not policy. I do think even aside from how we're treated as Republicans in this area, I think the Democrats can be closed-minded to all kinds of things because they lack these markers even inside their own party.
I want to go back to the phones. Dave from Concord is on the line. Dave, welcome to Radio Boston. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, so I actually don't think that there is an intolerance of political agreement here. I think it's more about factual items, because if you look at how the facts are presented, for instance, you think about climate change, and the Republican Party in general is against spending money on climate change. And that's something that scientifically is proven as a fact, yet our president denies that that's actually something that's happening. So I think what's happening is in the most educated areas is that you're getting people who disagree on the facts, and therefore, as a result of that, they end up switching to their parties, where the Democrats tend to lean towards the scientific side of the house and things like that, and the Republicans tend not to.
Yeah, interesting point, Dave. Ed, I know you said you're kind of a unique Republican here, but it's still your party. How do you see the way your party deals with something like climate change, where science is pretty well settled on that?
Well, until very recently, there's now a majority of Republicans to support the idea that climate change is real and that humans are causing it. I do think that President Trump is sort of pushing people in the other direction. But in general, I mean, under the age of 40, most Republicans I know believe in man-made climate change and they want something done about it. And Governor Baker is starting to lead on this issue. So I do think that's changing a little bit. But I think he's right that climate change has become one of these like tribal cultural issues where they're not really interested in learning about climatology and ice cores and carbon isotopes and all those things. What they're really saying is, oh, our side believes this and your side believes that. And that becomes one of the battlegrounds. But I don't think Republicans have problems in Boston because they don't believe in climate change. I think it is about the demographic and culture markers in this study and not about my position about greenhouse gases.
So I want to go a listener on Twitter. Susan S. Flagg is tweeting, two of my adult children refuse to follow me on Facebook due to our different political views. We still chat and all, but veer away from touchy subject. And then she throws in, they are Trumpettes. I'm just curious, in the time we have left, so much of this conversation, I think, comes down to dehumanization of the others, basically. How do you kind of see that in, you know, about 30 seconds here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is that the core of the modern Republican Party and the conservative movement is the dehumanization of people who aren't white. And so fundamentally what this study is really surfacing is a lot of that intolerance. And so I think that, you know, it's easy to say like there's cultural markers around it, but fundamentally, you know, we have parties who are saying trans people aren't people, black people should be, you know, think about their interactions, Latinos should be treated differently, people should be in cages. There's a real dehumanization of a lot of Americans going on. And so there's obviously a necessary reaction to that that's equally as feeling like I'm not sure about that. And I do think you should have to prove that you don't believe those things because those are all horrible things to believe.
All right. Well, Ed, we'll have to give you the last word next time you come back. That's Jordan Berg Powers, Executive Director for Mass Alliance, a coalition for political progressive policies, and Ed Lyons, Massachusetts Republican activist and political writer. Thank you both so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Paris Alston, Zoe Mitchell, Eve Zuckoff, and Walt Wuthman. Tim Skog is our technical director. We had engineering help today from Renee Marchando. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Chris Siderick. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.